Good morning, everybody, again. So this meeting will be recorded so that we can share with people that cannot attend today. So the new C21 product review. Today we're going to review the new C21 vaccine, the Capvaxive. Also known as a 21, it's also known as a 21-valent pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. So today we're just going to focus on what it is, why it matters. We're going to look at the guidelines and how to safely administer it, as well as we'll go through a case study and have questions at the end. So I'd like to start off with the land acknowledgement. I acknowledge that I live and work here on Treaty 6 territory, the homeland of the Métis. I pay my respect to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this place and reaffirm our relationship with one another. Sorry, guys. I might be coughing a little bit throat. Today is a we're going to talk about the new C21 vaccine. So the start date for Saskatchewan was dis or is December 1st, 2025. I know we are starting a little bit late. The turnaround time was pretty quick for this vaccine to have all the resources out and everything. The dosage, you will find that when you do order the vaccine, it will be a single dose pre-filled syringe, and the dosage is 0.5 mil. The route is IM, and the preferred site for the vaccine is the deltoid. The manufacturer is Merck. It is contraindicated in individuals with a history of severe allergic reaction, example anaphylaxis, and to any component of the vaccine, including diphtheria toxoid. It protects against 21 pneumococcal serotypes, which is broader than the pneumococcal vaccine 13, 15, and 20. So, as we know, the conjugate vaccines will produce stronger and longer immunity compared to the polysaccharide vaccines like the P23. So, this means that there will be better protection for adults at risk of pneumonia, sepsis, and meningitis. As of December 1st, like I said, the vaccine will be available for our Saskatchewan residents that are over the age of 65. So who's eligible for the vaccine? Individuals 65 years and older who have never received any previous pneumococcal vaccines. Individuals also 65 years and older who have documentation of previous pneumococcal vaccine and have at least one eligible risk factor will be eligible. And also those with hematopoietic stem cell transplant recipients, 65 years and older. And for that eligibility factor, we would refer to SIM Chapter 7. So it is indicated for those group, that group of our population. What are the risk factors? So risk factors include those that are in long-term care, personal care homes, and group home residents, acquired complement deficiency, asplenia, congenital, acquired, or functional, cancer, must have a current diagnosis and not in remission, congenital immunodeficiency, human immunodeficiency virus like HIV, immunosuppression related to disease or treatment. So only hematopoietic cell transplant recipients 65 years and older will qualify. Those with kidney disease, sickle cell disease, and other hemoglobinopathies. So, eligibility for these risk factors is based on age. Risk factor, pneumococcal immunization history, and interval from last pneumococcal vaccine dose. So when you do look at into the SIM, we'll look at the the pages from the sim a little bit later in the presentation. But when you do look at the sim, or when you do have your client present and requesting a pneumococcal vaccine that's aged 65 or older, you will always look at the immunization history and the interval from the last pneumococcal vaccine. So, what are the side effects? Based on the sim, the local side effects include injection site pain, redness and swelling, fatigue, systemic fatigue, fever and headache, muscle aches. These mild reactions generally last 1 to 2 days. And you only treat fever at least 6 to 8 hours after immunization. So it's important to remind clients when you're doing your counseling that if they do have fever, to try hold off from that Tylenol until 6 to 8 hours after immunization. And the reason being is just to ensure that the immune system is being primed, that it is, the fever does indicate that the immune system is working. It's working to fight off that infection. So storage and administration. So this is what you'll see when you open your box. It is a pre-filled syringe, very easy to use. We want to protect it from light. We don't want to freeze the vaccine. Keep it between 2 and 8 degrees as labeled on your syringe. Administer as soon as possible after being removed from the fridge, and inspect for any particulate matter before injecting. So for the new C21, this is what you're going to see when you look in the sim, chapter 10. There is a nice little table that indicates who gets the vaccine. So it's for individuals 65 years of age and older. So if they have had no documented, in table A, it indicates that if they've had no documented pneumococcal vaccines in the past, they would be eligible based on age. So we would offer one dose of the new C21. Table B indicates eligibility for individuals 65 years and older with qualifying risk factors. So if they've, we look, like I said, we look at their history, their immunization history, and if they've only had new C 7, 10, 13, or 15, and they have the qualifying medical risk factor listed previous, then they would be eligible for one dose of new C21. If it has been greater than or equal to 1 year, minimum 8 weeks or 1 year after the last documented new C20, new C dose. So, sorry, give me 1 second here. I'm just going to pull up the sim. So within the sim, it does say footnote 2. So to see footnote 2, I'm just going to go have a quick look here. So footnote 2 does indicate that an interval of 8 weeks may be considered for individuals anticipating immunosuppressive treatments or who have medical conditions that might lead to immunodeficiency. So that's something you might want to either send me an email or give me a phone call and just say, "Hey, Sunshine, I have this person. Can we look into it? I don't know if they're eligible," or calling one of your nurse managers might be an option as well. Just to double check. Also, for the next point, it says only has new P23 doses in their history. So they would be eligible for it, the new C21, provided that they have one, or you would provide one dose of new C21 if it's been greater or equal to 5 years, minimum 1 year after the last documented P23 dose. And footnote 3 indicates an interval of 1 year may be considered for individuals anticipating immunosuppressive treatments or who have had medical conditions that might lead to immunodeficiency. So if they've had a new C unspecified, or a new C7, 10, 13, and a P23 dose, we would then again provide one dose of new C21. If it's been greater than 5 years after the last documented pneumococcal vaccine dose. So basically, the new C21 is going to be for those that are 65 years plus, if they have qualifying risk factors, as well, even if they've been immunized before, we would still give them another new C21 dose. If they're under the age of 65 and they have risk factors, we would offer the new C20 dose for those clients. So this vaccine is only going to be for those that are 65 plus. Okay. So in table C, you'll note when we're looking at the vaccine history, they would be ineligible for a publicly funded C21 dose if they've already had a C20 dose. If they've already had a C21 dose, or if they've had the P23 and the C15 doses. So this is a table that you would go to look when you're analyzing the immunization history. Okay. So I have a little case study. I'm hoping that I get some participation from people. The case study is Doreen, age 67, has COPD and a history of smoking. She received a new P23 in the past, 10 years ago, and has never received a conjugate pneumococcal vaccine. So is she eligible for Capvaxive?
Yes.
Yes, I heard yes. Yes, she would be eligible for Capvaxive as she meets the age and the risk criteria. So question two, should she be revaccinated despite the past new P23? So based on that little table that we saw in the previous slide, we look here, she's had a P23 in the past 10 years ago. We would provide one dose of C21 if it's been greater than 5 years, minimum of 1 year after the last documented P23 dose. So yes, she would be eligible for a C21. And what counseling might be needed? So if I had this client in front of me, I would explain to her, I'd say, Doreen, you've had a P23 10 years ago, the pneumococcal vaccine that protects you against 23 different strains of pneumonias. We do have a new vaccine that is eligible, that you would be eligible for today. It is a different type of vaccine that's going to provide you improved protection, and it is a conjugate vaccine. It's going to give you longer lasting protection against 21 different strains of pneumonias. Would you like to proceed with that vaccine today? And she would say, yes, of course, I would love to take the vaccine. And yeah. So just explaining that it is an improved vaccine. It is something that's going to provide a longer lasting protection and stronger immunity to 21 different strains of pneumonias for the client.
Hi, Sunshine.
Yep.
I have a quick that scenario you just painted. What if that age, just want us to, since we have a lot of people on the call, if that age was lower,
I'm
say it
sorry,
was.
just give me 1 second. Grace.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me? So I just want you to reverse this scenario. Says she was Doreen was 63.
Okay.
Can you simulate that then if she was 63, not just not 65? What would
Okay.
happen?
If Dorian was 63 and presenting for vaccine, just to say she's coming in for her flu shot. And we see that she's 63. She has COPD, a history of smoking, but she's received NUP23 10 years ago. So because she's not 65, we would look at the new C21. Sorry, the new C20 risk factors and see if she would be eligible then. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to pull this up here. So we look at the new C20, and that vaccine is for individuals 6 weeks through 64 years old. And we would see here under the qualifying risk factors that she is a smoker, she does have COPD. I believe there is a lung disease here. So lung disease does qualify her for the vaccine for new C20. We would then look at this table here. And this table has been revamped as well, with the changes that are happening with the added vaccine. For our 65 plus, 65 years and older population. So, if we look on this documented pneumococcal vaccine history, and she only has the new P23 dose, we would look at the age of presentation. She's 63. So, we would provide one dose of new C20 if it's been greater than 5 years after the last documented P23 dose. So Doreen would get a new C20 dose today. Is that good?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I just want us to, simulate those just in case we have that kind of scenario.
Yep, not a
Sure.
problem. And it is good to look at this table as well as it's been changed. So if you have any what you're looking at, the algorithm was taken out. And now it's more of like a table, and it's going to indicate what age they're presenting at and how to move forward with the vaccine process, I guess, which one you're going to choose. Cassandra, go ahead.
I just have a question in regards to that little asterisk that has like for the minimum to 1 year. Like, who would qualify at that minimum to 1 year, if you don't mind? Just.
That would be our, if like under special circumstances, if it was, say, a client who had cancer and is going to undergo treatment, and they've had it in like in if they know they're going to undergo treatment and they want to get that vaccine prior to their treatment, so it would be under special circumstances if they have if they're undergoing some sort of treatment that's going to suppress their immune system, it's something that they can get prior to that.
Okay, thank you. And then I have one more question about like the original case scenario. So basically the risk factor under the pneumo 20 actually lists lung disease, which would capture the COPD. But when we look at the pneumo 21 risk factors, then we're going to the risk factor being, is it the immunosuppression related to disease? Okay.
So yeah, we'd
But
have
yet they
to,
don't list lung conditions
okay.
in that.
It's a little bit more vague, a little bit more room for interpretation, I guess you could say. So what she's talking about is these risk factors under the new C20 information pages here. But we would also look at SIM Chapter 7, and that would be for special populations. And so if you have questions about whether or not we can go look at SIM Chapter 7, it would indicate if they were eligible for the C20 or C21. I hope that answered your question. Okay. Some of the key takeaways today is Capvaxive will expand PCV21 expands serotype protection, so it offers more protection for our elders, our older population, our vulnerable population, and it provides a strong immune memory. It's easy IM administration with prefilled syringes. Most importantly, it is the best protection for our elders and medically vulnerable clients. So at this time, the message that I want to get across today is that NEPA does have a limited amount of vaccine available. So when ordering, we want to ensure that you already have your clients allocated that are eligible. So when doing, like when you know you have somebody who hasn't had the C20 or the C20 or P23, they're over 65. It would be important to know that you need three doses in your community and order those three doses. That would be for those three clients. Also checking with them to make sure that they are willing to get the vaccine so that you can order it for them, would be important. This vaccine, like I said, we don't have very much of. We don't have a large allocation. We can always order a little bit more, but we're just not, it's not something that we will be able to just, we can't ensure that we're going to have a larger amount later. So it's going to be really important to make sure that your vaccine is allocated for your clients in your community. We can't have the vaccine just sitting on shelves in fridges. So it is going to be kind of a special order vaccine for the startup of this program. Laura, I see your hand is up.
Hi. We were just wondering if you'd be able to open up chapter 7 for us just so we can look at it together.
Okay.
And then also just to clarify, so immunosuppression under for pneumo C21, COPD would fall under immunosuppression related to disease.
Just give me one second to bring that up here. So when we're looking at the C21, I'm going to go to chapter 7 under special populations. Just give me a second, guys. Okay. So if we look under, let's say lung disease, excluding asthma unless on high dose oral corticosteroid therapy are at higher risk of influenza-related complications, including pneumococcal infection, potentially the exacerbation of their underlying disease. So all routine vaccines except for PCV15 for children, new C20 only for those younger than 65 years old. Refer to the directives and new C20 immunization schedules for immunized individuals. And then for specific. So, yeah, it brings you back here. So, sorry, you're asking for the over 65 or the under 65?
Over 65.
Over 65. Okay. So, if we were looking at that. And you were asking about the.
So if for if she had never had only had pneumo 23 and was over 65, Does she have a qualifying medical risk factor to allow her to get the 21? Because there's no lung disease on those lists.
Yes.
So where would like it does that fall in somehow into some gray or professional?
Yeah, it would be under the immunosuppression related to disease. I know it's kind of a gray area,
Well,
but
and technically, diabetes also is an immunosuppressive disease. So, and it's not listed in over 65, but yet we're assuming that lung disease is now going under immunosuppression as well. So, what about diabetes?
Diabetes would fall under that as well. I know it's very vague. I can bring this back to Loretta and just to ask her, under immunosuppression, what does that? It's kind of hard for me to answer that, but I will bring that back to the table and just find that answer for you guys, okay?
Yeah, that'd be great if you could take that back and find some more answers for us. That'd be greatly appreciated, Sunshine.
Yes, for sure. And I'm glad you're bringing that up. I'm glad you're bringing that to my attention because yeah, well, other how you know, if you're asking the question, I'm sure other people will have the same question. And also, it is a new document, right? So there will be things that need to be changed as well. Grace? Your hand is up. So if there aren't any other questions, I think that's it for today. I just wanted to do a quick touch base with everybody. You can check out the information pages in Chapter 10, as well as print off the pneumococcal 21 vaccine info sheet here. That has all the information that you would share with your clients. And for your clinical practice, and when you're ordering vaccine, just to ensure that you already have the vaccine, are the number of doses that you're going to need for your community. Grace, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, no, apologize. My computer went frozen in
That's
the chat.
okay.
So I was going to say, I'm talking about diseases that qualify for immunosuppression. Of course, all the COPD, the cancer, and I would assume diabetes will qualify for that because it's an immunosuppressive condition as well. Even though it sounds tricky, but it's not as tricky as we think. Anything that we know in our medical practices is immunosuppression. Organ transplant, chronic lung diseases. They said asthma when on high dose corticosteroid, that would be like the severe stage of asthma, not the mild stages. Diabetes definitely should qualify for that, but we can always verify. But everything we think in our normal medical practices that immunosuppression will qualify for this as well. I thought the question Laura was asking was more of eligibility in terms of is it publicly funded or do they have to pay out of pocket? I thought maybe that was what Laura was trying to clarify, if it's out-of-pocket payment or is it covered by the government?
Hi, Grace. No, that wasn't really what I was asking. It was just trying to understand if COPD would fall under immunosuppression, but it didn't really state that.
Okay, absolutely. COPD would definitely 100% fall under immunosuppression, 100%. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Grace. That does provide some clarification.
And diabetes as well, Grace.
Yes.
It should fall under, but we can verify because diabetes is chronic illnesses like diabetes should fall under immunosuppression. But we can verify, I think, but I'm almost 98% sure about that. But we can verify.
It might be one thing that I'm thinking would be a good resource is to have a list of immunosuppressive diseases, maybe that people can refer to. Something that I might recommend is just to have a list of those diseases that are not a list or maybe a general list. I'm not sure. Something to think about.
Hey, Sunshine. Kathy here brought up a good point. The list for COVID vaccine, that list, would that be the same list maybe that they would be using, or would it be the immunosuppressive list?
Yes, that could be a very, it could be, yes.
Okay. Maybe if
So
you could find out for sure for us,
I
that'd
will.
be great. Thank you.
I'll bring that one forward as well. Are there any other questions, concerns, at this time? If not, if you guys have any questions, you can always send me an email. You can give me a phone call. Shoot me a text. Deanna will also be accepting orders now for the vaccine, now that we've had the kind of info session talking about our lower stock and just ensuring that you guys have your vaccine set out to who you need to give it to in your communities. I hope everybody stays warm. It's super cold out there today. And wishing everybody a safe, happy holiday season. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year if I don't see you before then. Thank you for joining. I really appreciate it. And I'm always here if you ever need anything. You know how to reach me. Thank you. Have a good day, everybody.
Here, so I'm not
Thank
there.
you.
You're welcome.
Sorry. Thank you, everyone. Bye.